Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us to the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct the hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, it's time to rethink your level A protection. Multi-threat suits made of lightweight Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric are part of the most functional non-encapsulated level A ensembles that bring an essential modernization to hazmat PPE. Certified NFPA 1994 Class 1 suits with Gore Chempak Ultra Barrier Fabric offer unencumbered movement, increased range of motion, improved peripheral visibility, excellent dexterity, and reduced heat stress so you can stay engaged longer. You can learn more at GoreTexProfessional.com. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Hazmat Guys, episode 316, I believe, right?
316.
Got a lot of good stuff coming on. We have got, 2022 is around the corner, and conferences are opening up like crazy. I feel like we had this same conversation the same time last year, and we've got a new variant out there, so we'll see what's going to happen. But as of right now, where are we expected to be?
Oh, my God. I just had a stupid idea. You know, like every time a new variant, I got this bell on my, see if you're watching us, you can see it. So I thought it'd be funny to do it for something like the word of the day. But now I think anytime a new variant of COVID comes up, we'll ring the bell.
Oh, that's a lot of ringing.
Yes. So if you hear the bell, you know what that's for. A new variant has popped up. But where are we going to be? We're going to be in no particular order. I know this is coming up all before middle of May. Minnesota? No. Michigan? Oh, shit. Right on top of my freaking head. Wisconsin. Those two you're doing.
Yep.
And then I'm doing Midwest and Cold Zone, and those are all by mid-May. We haven't even gotten into the early summer months, and lots of good stuff coming down the pipe with the conferences. We have some good stuff coming, but I don't want to allude to it yet. We're seeing how that pans out.
Yes. Always panning.
Yes, panning. So what are we doing?
All right, so today's episode, don't roll your eyes, people. It's out there. We have to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's not COVID.
Oh, good.
But it's close.
Mm.
It's lithium-ion batteries.
Oh, my God.
I feel like this conversation is being pounded into the ground. But then I'm like, oh, well, what else could we talk about? Like, we've covered so much. We've had experts on. We've had Paul Rogers on. We've talked about tactics and thoughts and chemistry and all this other stuff. And then we go on to the Hazmat 2 group, and we look at posts and comments and there's always some interesting idea and interesting thought. So this week, we're going to kind of talk about one specific post on the internet and some of the comments and the threads and the videos and things along those lines. We're going to parse them out. We're going to hash them out. We're going to give our stupid two cents on the different things that are out there. Take it or leave it for what it is. But that's what we were thinking about doing today.
All right. Well, I'm going to agree with you because I have, though it seems there are many, many other things to be talking about with hazmat, I have been on an ungodly amount of lithium ion battery incidents in the last 2 months.
Now, why do you think that is? What is going on? Like, is this like a Ghostbusters thing? Like, is suddenly there's like a revolt?
No.
You know, like there's a river of slime running underneath New York City, and
the Keymaster is
coming.
I think, and they haven't been. I still have not been seeing a lot of the Tesla, right? And we're talking about vehicles, the electric vehicles. They are, as we've said in past episodes, we've said that they are statistically not probable yet, but they will be in short order. What is exploding is these e-bikes, e-scooters, all of these small things. These it's incredible, the whole, you know how like Disney World has its underground city that's underneath Disney? They never take out the garbage. The garbage just drops into the ground and they take
the
it out from underneath. There is such a robust infrastructure that I didn't even know. Like, you don't even think about these things. These scooters that are on the street, these app-based scooters, all major metropolitan places and quite a few mid-range metropolitan places have these guys that just get into like a minivan and they have racks of batteries in the back. And they drive around all night long when nobody's using the scooters and they just swap out batteries. Right. And so you're like, that's how they do that. Because those things are like just laying on the side of the road somewhere, wherever the hell they are in your municipality, we'll say. Well, that guy takes that truck back to a warehouse, or what we've been seeing a lot of, he goes back to his house and he brings it in with the other 3 million batteries he's got in there and just plugs them into an electric strip and then goes to sleep during the day so that at night he can do it again.
Yeah. And we've been seeing this actually happen in hotel rooms.
Yes, you
like
remember that
people
one?
Are renting out hotel rooms so that they can use the hotel's power.
Power, because it's free.
Because it's free. I mean, I guess the $100 a night for a hotel is cheaper than the power that is needed to charge these sometimes hundreds of batteries.
Yep.
And like Bob said, this is a game of well, there's two things going on, right? First, the game of probability. Yes, the batteries, for the most part, the good batteries, and I'll stress that because that's part two. The good batteries, let's say they had a 0.5% failure rate, right? Like literally one out of every 200 fail.
Okay.
Okay, great. One out of every 200 fail. If your metro area has got 500 of these bicycles,
yes,
that means in any given week, one of them is going to start to fail.
Yep.
And when you go from 500 to 5,000, now those statistics start to punch you in the face. And you're like, oh, wow, I'm doing this a lot more often.
Yeah. You know? I don't have any hard numbers, but I can give you my anecdotal experience. For a random municipal large city, we'll say, up in the Northeast area, I will say there are probably 4 to 8 houses, buildings, or occupancies, whatever, buildings going on fire on a daily basis because of these things.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It isn't even like an exponential growth. It is gone up so fast. In what seems to be like the last 6 months, all of a sudden, everything else is paltry compared to it. And so you might be like, okay, why do I give a crap? I'm not in that city. I'm not in that municipality. Because if you don't think this is coming to a theater near you, you are foolish. This is coming to you.
And even if you're like, yeah, whatever, I'm out in the suburbs, we're seeing these start to happen with the cars. And Tesla just happens to be the one that everybody associates with electric vehicles. But the fact of the matter is that the Tesla brand itself has got incredible, almost impeccable quality control standards and tolerances.
Yes.
Right? So we look at the Tesla cars and we're like, okay, wow, okay, this happens. Yes, this is going to happen. High-speed crash. Like, you can't give each battery its own little airbag and protect it. That's ridiculous.
That'd be crazy.
But what happens when vehicles start coming onto the market in such high demand that these batteries are no longer held to those kind of quality control standards? They're coming in from other countries. And they're putting so much energy not only into such a small area, but the things that separate the chemistry are just these little wisps of material. And you can lose, you know, you go from a 0.5% failure rate to a 5% failure rate, and all of a sudden your entire area is going to burn down when these things start to charge.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, I never really... It really never did anything for me. And personally, I live about 24 and a half miles away from my workplace. And if I were to take my bicycle, that is a nice ride, right? Maybe 2 hours if you're not busting your butt. I seriously considered buying one of these e-bikes. And they range anywhere from like $500 for one that you're going to throw out next year up to a couple of $1,000 where you kind of get the assist. So my son really wanted to get one. Oh, there's another one. He wanted to get one, right? So he wanted to throw all his birthday Christmas money at this thing, and he bought a rather nice one, about $1,500, right? He saved up for a long time to buy this thing. It is a bicycle with a larger back hub and regular chain and spokes on the front. Crank wheel and all that shit on the front. And so I was kind of, I thought the ones that you can pedal actually generated energy back into the system.
I would have thought the same thing.
It does not work that way, at least in this model. I'm sure there are ones that do that, but this model, what their whole philosophy is if you pedal and you take some of the workload off of the motor, then you are extending the duration of that battery's life. You know, if it's pushing a 200-pound person 20 miles an hour by itself, rather than you giving it 50% of the load, well, you just doubled the capabilities of that.
Sure.
Thing. So this thing is, I got to say, spooky cool. And I can see the allure of why people are doing this. It's got like a little heads-up display on the thing, a little cockpit thing. And when you start riding, it is almost like, oh, I can just have a good time spinning my cranks. But what you're really doing is you're adding back energy into the system, and therefore you're extending the whole thing. Now, why all this talk is, first off, they're sexy. Second off, I didn't think I was ever going to have one in here, and I made a hard and fast rule that you will not, I don't care under what circumstances, charge that battery within 20 feet of this house. It goes into my shed, which actually has electric and is like 200 feet back from the house. It's not really 200
with
feet.
Sprinkler system.
Yeah, it's in the guest quarters above the stable, you know. So.
Yes. Yeah, which, you know, really. I mean, if you're concerned about the thoroughbreds, you really have to make sure that they're protected properly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I don't think you're going to see as much. And now I'm going to eat this crow in about 2 years if we're continuing to do this thing. But in about 2 years, I have a feeling that the cars are going to be a bigger thing, because these little battery packs, and I don't mean to say little, but we'll say there are 200 cells in this thing versus 14,000 cells in a Tesla. It has a lot less fire loading in these mini bikes. But the problem is that, and what I've been seeing is a lot of these, like, let's say a restaurant goes on fire, is that the delivery guy puts battery A on charge in the restaurant while he's using battery B to go deliver. And they close up shop. The delivery guy just takes, you know, I'll drop this off on the way home. And he drops off the thing on the way home. Battery A is still charging in the place, and it goes on fire. And you come back to an inferno. That's what's happening. So there's two batteries for every bike, you think about now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot to go wrong with these. And I know we kind of started off wanting to talk. I got a video that we want to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about it a little later on. But as long as we kind of started down this path of the smaller batteries, we've changed our tactics a little on how we deal with it. Maybe we should talk a little bit about that.
Yes.
Because there was – so we'll just describe kind of what had transpired in some random place in the United States is that, you know, these batteries are being charged in houses. And if you're in a city, you're not in a house, you're in an apartment. And if you're in an apartment, chances are you're not on the first floor. Chances are you're on the 30th floor because that's always what happens. And so it kind of became this, well, the fire department shows up and what are they doing with this battery, right? Because here we're being told that they're unstable. They can ignite and burst into flames and give off toxic gases at any moment in time. And then it's like, okay, well, I got to get from this apartment to the outside street. Am I carrying this? Am I putting it in a drum? Am I putting it in the elevator? Am I submerging it in water? Am I bringing out submerged in water? Am I covering it with a special material? Am I covering it with a blanket? If I bring it inside an elevator and it suddenly erupts, I've got people trapped in an elevator with a fireball. And if I'm walking down the stairs with this thing and it erupts, what do we do? Like, it literally, there suddenly became all of these how do we operate properly questions. And they're kind of working out different solutions.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring up in the post show a couple of the solutions that I am subscribing to because I think they are pretty sound. They accomplish a couple of the issues that we were seeing, like the weight of carrying it down. Like, okay, I got a 6-story, I can carry that down. But what happens if you have a 70-story? Or what happens if you got to move it a quarter of a mile? You know, right. Like you have this in a warehouse or a wide rise. What is your methodology to carry this thing up and out? And you're not dragging it. Maybe you can put it on a cart. Maybe.
So what if you have a fire and now, you know, you've got 19 of these batteries that were in the room that was on fire? Like, are we considering them no good? Like, how do we know?
How are you triaging them?
Yeah. How are we triaging these batteries?
See, I'm writing things down here, and it's not that my mustache looks good or anything. But, oh, new variant. Just came in. I'm going to get tired of doing that. Yeah. Okay. I'm writing things down so we can remember to do that. There is a video, though, we have for the show.
Yeah, so let's get back on track as far as the reasoning for the talking about batteries in the first place. Where is the, here we go. Okay. So this is on the news. We'll link this.
We are going to embed it into the show. So
okay.
I will take care of that.
I'm going to kind of talk through this this video. It's on the news. I'm watching an ABC website to give the right, you know, credit to where the credit is due. So, you know, there's no, like, copyright stuff. And now I'm waiting for the ad to disappear in 2 seconds. It is a 26-second video, and it starts off with it's nighttime somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Maples and Glen.
What's up?
Home of the Fighting Mascots. Oh, Maples Glen, yeah.
So they start off, the video starts off surrounding this car that is clearly fully involved, but not fully involved as we would think about a normal car, right? If we think about what is burning when we go to a normal car, it usually starts in the engine compartment, unless there's some kind of like a gasoline or acetylene accident. And works its way this way. This is starting from the middle of the car, and the fire is inside the car.
Yeah.
And if you look at the car that's burning, really close to it is the house. And it turns out that this car, it went on fire while it was charging. And the inferno did, in fact, spread to the house. So as we watch them attempt to attack the car, there's a couple of interesting things. Right around the 8-second mark, mm-hmm. you see some kind of a pop or an explosion. Now, I'm not saying that's from the batteries. Cars like this, you have the airbags, you have all sorts of pistons, you have plenty of things that can pop. But it does lend us back to this back to basic concepts of there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a car fire. Why are we walking around not in proper PPE? Well, and we're wearing masks on our back. Why are our face pieces not on? Because we know that these types, well, a regular car fire has got plenty of nasty shit that comes off of it to begin with. But we start talking about the batteries burning, and we know that those toxic materials start to spike through the roof. So yeah. Knowing and understanding that, like, you're going into a car fire, you need to be wearing your face piece. If you didn't hear yet, we are transitioning to a new format that is going to give you, the listener, even more content.
Yeah, for example, in our technician and specialist levels, we are adding even more video content, access to our entire show catalog, and even access to a monthly small group Q&A session to answer any questions that come up, as well as so much more.
All of this for less than a cup of coffee that you premium snobs like to drink for the entire month of access.
This is the stuff that you've been asking for. So take a look at what we can do to take you to the next level of hazmat.
Go to our website, thehazmatguys.com. You can sign up for our premium tiers that will give you even more hazmat goodness.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I mentioned this, but this is a great drill that if you're running like a technician class and you're doing chemical lookups, give each group, like, okay, you guys got formaldehyde, you guys got carbon monoxide, you guys give, and basically they all look at them up, and without variation, they all go, oh, I would be wearing level A. I'd be wearing level A. And like, okay, that's the product to smoke, so why don't we do that? And they're all like, crap. And you go, okay, go to break. You know? and they kind of like, oh, crap. But that's true. Like, we're talking about the regular products in combustion, the thing that we think about in regular fires, and now you add in these lithium-ion batteries, plastics, right? There was a old fire from the early, no, maybe mid to late 70s in New York City. It was the phone company fire, and it was at, I want to say, one of the Bell buildings in Lower Manhattan. Look this up. This is a good one for you. Basically, there's pictures of this where the smoke is just basically sideways. And pretty much, I'm not saying this is an absolute fact, but I don't think there was anybody in the fire department that was at the fire that day that is still alive. They all got cancer.
Yes.
And it was all from the coatings of the wire, the plastics in it, was the major contribution to the cancers that were found that day. So when you're talking about a Tesla, which they're trying to keep the weight to energy ratio down, right? So they're trying to make it as lightweight as possible. Ergo, they're using a lot of plastics, a lot of lightweight metals, foams, et cetera. That smoke is not a house fire. Don't equate it.
No, it's not even a regular car fire. Like, yes, there's petroleum type plastics and things like that, but you're talking about chemistry. Like, imagine if you went, you need to look at every single battery fire as a chemistry lab fire.
Right.
And treat it no differently, where you're like, wow, I can smell the smoke. I need to have my SCBA on, which is a really not cool thing for us to do, right? Like, we always joke around about the guy who's got his SCBA on in the yard.
The yard breathers.
The yard breathers, right. Like, we even have a terminology for them, and we've looked down upon them, and unfortunately, we need to really start to become them. Well, you guys need to start to become them, because I won't. I will probably just be an idiot and not do it. So do as I say, not as I do. But that is something that is so...
No, but, like, when you're talking about this, some of these things that are there, there's the...
there are things that are perceptible before they're toxic, and right. there are things that are toxic before they're perceptible. Right. So, like, for example, the thiols, like the things that we odorize natural gas with, we as humans pick it up very low before it's toxic. That's the intent of it. But there are things that we pick up. Oh, boy, that smells like, you know, musty hay. And they're dead.
Yeah.
I'm being funny about
Which
that.
But I don't know how they know it smells like musty hay.
They must have gone through so many different people to get the musty. What did he say?
Can you imagine that? Like, yeah, what did he? What was that last word? All right, Joe, you come in.
Come on.
We need that last word. Oh, don't even tell us musty. Just spit out the last word before you croak.
Wow.
So that was one. That was kind of a back to basic things and really had nothing to do with it. But you can see that they're stretching hose lines. You can see that the fire has extended to the house. They're trying to attack the fire in the car and the fire at the house at the same time. And this lends me to my next question. At what point do we start to think about when and how to remove the source of the fire from the structure? I get that the structure is already on fire, right? So we have to go in and we have to fight the fire anyway. But I don't want a Monday morning quarterback, but as an incident commander, if I had the opportunity to pull this car away from the structure, allow it to burn, and let my members focus solely on that house fire, is that a viable option?
Especially in the context. And listen, I'm going to embed this in the website. So if you want to see what we're saying, just go to the website because it's kind of silly for me to describe it anything more than Mike did for an audio only podcast. It's kind of, you need to see what we're saying.
Right.
But it looks a little bit more of the rural type setting. And so pull it out into the pasture. Like, just get it away.
Do we have the tools and techniques to be able to even do that anymore? I know that when I first joined the fire service, almost every truck, and I even know our hazmat rig used to have winches on them.
Yes.
I don't see that much anymore.
Well, in the premium section, I could probably talk about a couple of things that I would do.
All right.
That kind of thing.
We'll definitely go down that route. Okay, so that was my basic thought process is, guys, we need to start not thinking about these as car fires, right? We need to think about them for what they actually are. And that lends us to the conversation that started happening online. Again, I am referencing the Hazmat Group 2 that is run by our good friend Bob Kosh.
Yeah.
He does an absolutely phenomenal job on this. And if you are not a member of the Hazmat Group 2 on Facebook, I highly recommend joining it because a lot of really good information gets transported back and forth. But this was on November 9th, and I'm not going to use any kind of names. I'm just going to kind of read some things and some comments, and we can give our two cents on it. But
sure.
The post starts, new firefighting tools deliver water directly to blazing EV batteries in April. In April, a Tesla Model S crashed into Woodlands, Texas after the speeding driver failed to negotiate a turn and jumped the curb. The car then hit a drainage culvert and a raised maintenance hole before being stopped by a tree. They seem to do that very easily, trees.
Yeah.
According to an investigation reported by the National Transportation Safety Board, at this point, the Tesla promptly burst into flames. Firefighters needed 4 hours to douse the flames. Yes, 100%. I think we've probably talked about this one incident before. I think we actually had a whole show about it.
Yep.
And he says, electrical fires are not common, but they are different from fossil fuel fires that firefighters need a new approach. One firm in Europe has developed a shipping container-like box in which you can put the blazing EV in and then blast it from all sides. He says, but it requires a dedicated truck, making a cost addition for the fire department.
Right.
Which is totally true. And there were a tremendous amount of comments that came off of this, kind of going back and forth with that. Some of the comments had to do with grant funding for how we can pay for this dumpster, which, since this isn't really a grant show, I won't talk about that. But there is some interesting other thoughts that really need to be part of the conversation. One thought was, but when it takes away from the equipment we actually want, if it is truly a hazardous materials call, shouldn't they be ultimately responsible cradle to grave? And I think what he's referring to is comments of like, okay, like we take this, and I know we had the same conversation in battery classes that we've had, was we are now creating waste when we submerge these batteries in water. Who is responsible for that? If I have a 30-yard dumpster now filled with hazardous materials, who's responsible? The owner of the car? The manufacturer of the car? The fire department? Because there's precedent out there that the fire department is responsible for our waste that we create when we do things like technical decon. We don't just take that waste and hand it back to the responsible party. We take care of that waste.
Luckily, that's above me.
That is above me, but the people who are listening to may need to want to think about this.
Yeah.
And really good. And there were no good answers. One person said that's for disposable, not emergency response. Somebody said it's going to be disposed of after it's extinguished. With a reply back, not a fire department problem. That's the insurance or the vehicle owner to worry about. So nobody, these are things that people are thinking about after the fact instead of talking about it. One person showed the container in and of itself with the truck. It's a roll-on dumpster type of truck that's painted red, and they said it's a little impractical. Somebody said it's a dumpster truck with a fancy paint job. Seems pretty normal to me. And we kind of go on and so forth. Somebody wrote, my only worry using the PW, which I guess is what this is called, would be their response times. But it's not a bad idea. There's a lot of contractors out there that would have a roll-off in very short order. And they respond back, I'm talking about sending a team member over to transfer station and grabbing one of the trucks in the roll-offs. I personally don't think anybody's going to allow you to be like, hey, I'm the fire department. Can I come take, I'm going to take your dumpster. What's the word I'm looking for? It starts with a C. Commandeer.
Yeah, commandeer.
So, things along those lines. How do we do that? I said, because we've talked about this before, I said let it burn, which I don't know what your opinion on let it burn would be.
I concur.
You concur. Okay.
Yeah.
So that meant with a little bit of resistance, and I had written just as an FYI, submerged vehicle is no good according to the Tesla documents. So some responses to this idea, which is true. If you look into the Tesla handbook, it says do not submerge the vehicle in water. They expressed this opinion several times while we were working with them on upstate due to highway emergency response specialists, but I disagree. Not me. This is the person's comment, who I respect very much as a hazmat person. They have zero data to back up their reservations, and there's at least some data to back up submersion. The research done at the SW Research, which I don't know what that is, indicates that one of the biggest challenges to fighting these types of fires was access to the battery. Submersion solves this problem. I agree with that 100%.
I don't disagree.
Okay, so in fighting it, it is literally it's literally getting to the battery. And his response to me saying let it burn is that is not always an option. You can argue that it is in the firefighting world, but unfortunately, we live in a law enforcement and DOT world on the highway. You also have the optics of not doing your job. So yes, I agree with you in a perfect world that we don't live in. We live in a world where people call 911 because they accidentally break light bulbs in their rectum, which is a funny and true comment all at the same time. Oh, two variants.
Wow, that's crazy.
He's right to a degree, right? Like, we can't just turn around and let it burn on a highway.
I think the optics are going to look terrible. And I've been saying this for a while, is that I think we are – it's going to take a monumental change to change the outlook of the fire department or any emergency, like you said, DOT, PD, when people are going to be recording you and they have the fire department standing there with their hands in their pockets, whistling as they rock forward and back on their heels, you know, like, why aren't they doing anything? Well, we got to wait till the fire burns it in and then we can put some water on it for another day and a half. But we're going to keep the street shut down for like a day. This is going to be a very hard thing to do. And there are very smart people think about this, and I don't even think we're in the right ballpark as to an answer. I think anybody that is telling you that we have a plan or we got to figure it out, they're all full of crap. We are building this plane as we fly it. Even Tesla's guidance is like, yeah, but like,
yeah,
you know, like. I've been talking to people and people that are purported, you know, self-described experts on this thing. Nobody really knows, man. We're all building up the experience and the what starts as anecdotal observations turn into data-proven techniques.
Yes.
We just haven't gotten there yet.
We haven't. We haven't. You're right.
And we're getting there.
You know, there was a couple more back and forths with the whole submergent thing, and then somebody did say that they had seen a report of batteries underwater that continued to go off and burn.
Mm.
And there was the concept that Tesla's fault tests and burning of their own product includes EV battery chassis includes more than any other manufacturer. They have several licensed outdoor burn facilities. What they put in their guidance and in their guides to provide to emergency services is based on extensive data and experience with their battery. So that makes me be like, all right, well, then we're back to not submerging. I'm not quite sure. And then this product rears its head.
Oh, God.
Some agencies are using an encapsulating foam agent like F, and it has a couple of numbers with varying degrees of success, and that comes down to money. Have you heard anything that encapsulating foams in general will do anything for us for emergency vehicle for lithium ion battery fires?
I have not heard anything substantiated. I've heard lore.
I heard lore. If the problem is getting to the batteries itself in the chassis, I'm having a hard time understanding how an encapsulating agent that can't get to the battery is going to help put the battery out.
Yeah, I don't see it as much as, like, because you can, and I'm not a foam expert, but if we were talking about, like, wetting agents in order to drive in, like a Class A foam, where it's doing things with surface tension in order to drive it deeper into the thing. Okay, that's one thing. But the thing is that Class A foams are not really good with plastics and fuels. And so, like, I don't know. I'm not quite buying the pitch of these things, because anytime there's some weird thing happening, this one product pops up as, this is the snake oil you can buy and it'll fix all your problems. And you're like, oh, let me try this thing. And you're like, it's not working for me.
I think that's that so made weird. The fire angry.
It made it angry.
I mean, that was literally one guy's response.
Yeah.
So, all right. Premium?
Yes. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.